Hello and welcome to The Game Is About Glory. I'm your host, Steph, and joining me are Ram and Milo. Hello, gents.
Hi, Steph.
Good evening.
yes. Back in the day, chaps, we used to sing a song. Maybe you sung it as well, about playing Aston Villa. I don't know if you remember the song. If you don't, I'll give you a chorus. And for those of you who know the song I'm talking about, well, what a delight that we did indeed do just that. In a 4-0 drubbing of our nearest rivals at Villa Park, in what was, for me personally, perhaps our most satisfying result of the season. Do you know the song I'm talking about? It's a very childish song. We used to sing, we're going to shit on the Villa.
Oh,
shit on the Villa tonight. We're going to shit. So anyway, nice little ditty. Anyway, it was great though, wasn't it? Goals, superiority, the chickens coming home to roost. Emery flinching first, which he did. We'll get into that. There was even time for a Højbjerg Cruyff turn and Rodrigo getting a revenge tap on the horrible, dirty bastard Matty Cash. And we're about to have a whole lot of fun discussing it all, aren't we? So, but I think before we go there, we should talk. Let's mention the Spurs women today, please, because they advanced to the semi-final of the Women's FA Cup, beating Manchester City 4-3 on penalties at Brisbane Road, with Amy James Turner netting the decisive spot kick after the game had ended 1-1 at the end of extra time. City had been up. They'd be one up after 9 minutes, and we should note that Bethany England equalised for us deep into injury time to force the game into extra time. Late goals at Spurs sounds a bit familiar. Kind of a congruence through the ranks, I think, the club philosophy. Never quit. It's great. And it's the first time that we've been in the semi-finals of the Women's FA Cup. So many congratulations, and come on, you Spurs. Is my voice a little low? Is it a little lower than usual?
I think you're fine.
Okay. I was just wondering, because I know that I was screaming earlier this afternoon as we were watching the Villa game. Did you find this to be a slightly louder viewing experience for either of you? Any moments happen where I don't know where you were watching. I mean, were you yelling at the television a little more?
I watched at home, but my son was asleep. So I was doing the whole, the sort of silent celebrating.
Silent celebrating. Milo, anything interesting happened with you? Anything?
I was watching at home, making copious amounts of notes as usual.
But you just said something before we started recording, which I thought was great. I thought you did. Did you not say that you let a little? Come on, it was a great line. I'm prompting you to say.
Well, I was going to save that for when we got to that part of the pod, Steph. You don't throw it all out in the beginning.
Okay, all right. I thought if that's all you've got, which I doubt, then keep it. But otherwise, I understand. I understand. You're a man who's got plenty to give. That's why I thought I'd try and drag it out of you early. But he's going to sit on it, and
not
I don't blame
it.
Him.
Not having it. There's a running order, here, Steph. There's a running order.
I don't know. I like to float one over the top sometimes. I like to do a pirouette. I have no discipline anyway. But look, okay, let me reel it in. Reel it in. Oh God, I nearly talked third person about myself there. Reel it in, Stefan. Oh Jesus Christ. It's been a hell of a day. How exciting. Okay, Aston Villa, in a nutshell, what did you think of our performance? Ram.
I think it was a press. I think it was a professional performance. Sorry. It's the whole nutshell thing. Every time it gets right.
Yeah, you the nutshell throws you, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Mm. But I thought it was a professional performance in the first half that turned into a sublime showing in the second. I thought we made what could have been a very an incredibly tricky fixture, very comfortable, and we showcased all of the positive attributions that this manager brings to the table for us.
That is a beat that for putting something in a nutshell. Beat that.
I thought it was our best performance for some time. We controlled the game throughout. I think Villa set up to take a point. I think, you know, them being ahead of us in the table, I think, you know, that was their aim, is not to let us get closer to them. It worked up to a point in the first half, but we were moving the ball around and I think wearing them out. And, I think part of our strategy was that we know that, you know, they played 72 hours ago, and I think we were trying to wear them out and take advantage. And I think, you know, that's broadly what happened. Once we scored, their game plan of holding on for a point was ruined, and the sending off a few minutes later gave us complete control of the game. So I think, I think, again, it's another week where our pressing was absolutely superb. I think, certainly in the second half, I think, you know, when we put the game to bed, I think that's largely down to our pressing. So a really, really impressive performance. I think the other thing is that this really was kind of the return of Ange Ball. We've had what seems like quite a few months, doesn't it, of teams who are kind of low blocking us, and to actually have a bit of space to attack for a change made a real difference. So that was nice to see that back.
I thought it was our most mature performance of the season. I thought it showed actually a lot of wiseness, a lot of nous, incision at the vital moments, but also extreme control at key passages of the game. And I thought we managed the game in the way you would expect a Man City or someone like that to manage it. So for me, this is just further proof. This game is further proof of the fact that we are, we're striving to stand shoulder to shoulder with those clubs. We're not chasing them. And again, our most mature performance of the season. And we're going to break that down. And it's really interesting you brought up Ange Ball, Milo, because I think we're going to have to redefine something about Ange Ball for people as we talk about the game. I know it's something that you fervently will agree with and do agree with and hold the same opinion. I feel confident saying that. We will hold the same opinion on this, and you will as well, Ram. But let's get to that as we do. We'll start with the team selection.
So Porro in for Royal, Sarr in for Bentancur, Johnson in for Werner. This is what I want to see. I want to see us kind of, swapping in a few players each week. It keeps it fresh. It's not that kind of huge turnover, that huge turnover. It's not a A and B team or anything like that. We've got a core group of players there, and we're swapping them out. And I think also the players coming in, apart from, Porro for Royal, where, it's a clear upgrade. I think the other ones, you're looking at kind of little tactical tweaks. And, we talked last week about Bentancur makes sense when we're going to have a lot of the ball. I think for this one, Sarr makes a lot of sense because Villa are an athletic side. We know that they're, they're good on the break, and they're a challenge there. And I think that, it's kind of horses for courses, which is a great position to be in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, I liked your suggestion in the week, Milo, that maybe Johnson and Werner are either side of Son would have caused a lot of problems for Villa's high line. But obviously, I think Werner had picked up a bit of a knock or something. They didn't want to risk him at the start. Right. But it was so important to have both first choice fullbacks on the pitch again, because this is possibly our biggest game of our season so far. I like that it's just a little tweaks here and there every week is what we need to be doing to keep the squad fresh and to keep things sort of progressing well.
What I did like and about keeping Werner on the bench, and bear in mind, I'm someone who also thought having those three going like grease lightning would have been a great thing from the kickoff. What I did like is it does maintain lightning pace in our side for 100 minutes for the entire match, because obviously, you bring one on late and you don't lose any pace. So it's nice to know that you've always got that pace on the bench. I thought it was a smart selection, even more so the way the first half panned out. I think it was a really interesting first half. It was quite cagey. I mean, it was being played largely in the middle of the pitch, and no one seemed to want to actually punch home that ball over the top or so on and so forth. I mean, we had a lot of the ball, and it seemed like there were chances there to be created, yet we didn't necessarily take those options. Let's start with a simple question of why each of you think that was, and then we can get into the details, because I'm sure we've all got opinions on that.
Well, I thought Villa were very disciplined. I think they changed their preferred formation specifically for this game in an attempt to nullify our tactics, and they had three central defenders who were very good at following what Emery wanted for them. They were very, very solid at the back. And that's what I mean by I thought we had a very professional first half, because I think we had to, we couldn't be impatient with them. We started brightly. I thought we started really brightly. And then, as expected, I thought Villa got, they kind of took a bit of a foothold here and there. So the momentum was sort of swinging back and forth. But I agree with you, Steph, it was a lot of it was played in the middle of the park. But yeah, the first half lack of chances, I don't think it was because we weren't, we weren't trying to create them. It was just that we were coming up against a very disciplined back line, and we had to be patient.
I think it's a funny one, isn't it? You're right. The game was played pretty much in the kind of width of the centre circle. And that just moved up and down the pitch occasionally.
It was really bizarre to look at, wasn't it? It was really weird. Yeah.
I think you're right, Ram, to pick up the formation, that 3-5-2, which, became a 5-3-2 in defence. And, that means you're man for man against our attacking front five, which gives them very little space to operate in, and it's what we've seen a lot of the low block teams do against us as well. And it also means that those passing lanes through are congested. And then you've got, you know, three against three, it's not really, is it? Because, you know, our fullbacks and our eights push on, and you've got Bissouma there and the centre back. So it's not quite evening up, but it just congests that whole area and makes it very difficult for us to operate. Which is why, you know, I say I think they were aiming for a point or at least not to lose. But I think other than the odd break, I don't think really they troubled us that much. I think, you know, they didn't really create much. There was the cross come shot that went past the far post, but, you know, not much other than that. And, you know, that first half, we got 69% of the possession. We've done 281 passes to Villa's 105 with an 89% pass success rate. You know, I think in terms of, you know, territory and, possession, I think we dominated. We're moving them around. We're tiring them. And then I think a bit like last week, yeah, that's what creates the opportunities for us in the second half, is just wearing them down.
I think when you talk about that fatigue factor I want to quite call it rope-a-dope because it wasn't quite that, but, you know, as you say, let's keep them moving, let's keep them working, let's really wear them down. I think that explains perhaps why we didn't pop the ball over the top, because there are several occasions where Johnson or Sonny were making runs beyond, I think, and looking, and they just weren't getting the ball. I mean, you know, Christian would see them and he'd just turn inside to play a short pass. It was happening fairly often. And Bissouma and Johnson, who are, by the way, developing a really good relationship, I think, even there, they took what I would consider the quote-unquote more pragmatic option, maybe, when, you know, and I think maybe we'd have got into, you know, that sort of like Keystone Cops, like, we're going to go behind you and then you can go behind us. But we kept more control of the game this way. And get into Ange Ball here, Milo, because this is part of Ange Ball. And I think people think Ange Ball is all about, you know, speed and, like, you know, blitzing people. But let's explain it.
I mean, I think the key point here is that, you know, our build-up play from the back is kind of one of the key things about this tactic. And I think particularly Romero and Bissouma in this game were superb. And, if you think about when we're playing out from the back, Bissouma had two men on him all the time because the Villa were sitting off our centre forwards and just trying to block out midfield. Bissouma's got two men on him pretty much every time he's receiving the ball, laying the ball back, and then we get the pass in behind. And what that's doing is creating space for Saar, it's creating space for Maddison, it's creating space for Deki or Johnson to operate in. So it's quite a selfless role, but it's really important to our play. And we haven't really got anyone else in the team who's comfortable playing, facing our defence, you know, with back to the rest of play, who can do that in the same way. So I think that's really integral. There's a really good, I've been meaning to share it with you, actually. There's a really good video on YouTube where it shows the passing moves, like the training ground routines we do. I'll dig it out, I'll share it. If I find it in time, I'll put it in the notes with this pod so other people can look at it as well. So it shows on the training ground the various different routines that Ange does, and it's all around the kind of triangles and moving them around, players moving positions but all ending up in the same shape. And then it takes that and it shows real match situations where those routines are happening in games. And particularly, so it's got some where we're playing out from the back and then others, you know, the different phases of play. It's really interesting. And this was definitely a game where we saw some of that happening. So, yeah, I think that's a really important part. I don't know if that's what you were digging at, Steph, there, or whether there was another element of Ange Ball that you spotted that you wanted me to talk about. But I think the other thing we've got to bear in mind as well is that there have been occasions where Ange has got quite annoyed where we've gone long and lost possession.
Yes.
And, well, you know, if we're trying to wear them down.
Right.
And, you know, I think if we play long, you're right. If we play long, then it becomes a transitional game because they'll come straight back at us. And that probably doesn't give us that, the same second half.
Exactly. And I mean, I think when we talk about Ange Ball, I think that that's really the key to it. Is I think a lot of people have got carried away with the idea that, you know, we're a 93rd minute winner team and that it's always helter-skelter down the lane and like it's all... Yeah, but I think Ange is probably quite frustrated by those games, to be fair. I think he wants a modicum of... I think he wants control. And I just saw today as a real benchmark, definitive display of what Ange Ball is. If people want to understand what Ange Ball is, it was today. It's what you saw today. That's what it is. So it is about speed and it is about, you know, incision, but it's also about control and knowing when to go, knowing when not to, and having the confidence to play that disciplined stuff.
And when you think effectively that, you know, when we're in attack, we've kind of got a back three and everyone else is forward. If you don't have that control, then it, you know, people always kind of fret about the ball in behind, all the rest of it. Actually, we're pretty comfortable largely with that, but we're comfortable because of the way we build up and that control. And we're not giving the ball away cheaply on the whole. I had another point, but I've forgotten what it is now. Oh,
blimey.
Wow. It will come back to me.
Ram, we've been exchanging any thoughts on the on this this area of the conversation. I have something else to say about the first half, but
just to add, I think you know, and we've talked about it already, but and Milo just said it now. I think it's like a total package performance. It just and I said it earlier, like every element of what this system and what Ange can bring to this team, we showcase today. Like, you know how like musicians have like showcase gigs, whether it's for like record companies or something like that. If football had the same thing, it would be this performance would be our showcase performance.
You want it to be a good showcase. I remember Faith No More doing a showcase once for London Records back in the day, and Chuck Moseley, bless him, and God bless him, rest in peace, actually lay down and went to sleep during War Pigs in front of Slash and Warner Brothers executives. So it wasn't that kind of it wasn't that showcase, but I know exactly what you're saying. They did sign him. What are you talking about? And he was mercurial. He was a mercurial fellow.
There was points in the second half where quite a few of the Villa players looked like they wanted to lie down and have a snooze. So
indeed. And this will not be the only pop culture reference you're going to hear today. Oh, I can't wait to unload it. I really can't. I thought Destiny Adogie today was immense. Mm. I thought an immense first half, really big, really just really taking it to them. And again, getting some serious attention. I mean, Villa were not ignoring our inverted fullbacks. They, as we've discussed, they changed the formation to try and stymie all that. The second half couldn't have got off to a better start, with Saar putting in a lovely cross for Maddison to put away. Like last week, we didn't let the opposition settle and we scored our second 3 minutes later. How important are these periods of dominance, and did you feel the game was over at this point?
Well, firstly, can we have a moment for that stupendous cross by Saar? I don't think it, like, you know, we said it was a great cross, but yeah, it was incredible, you know, and he was kind of on the move and then just sort of glid. Is it glid?
Well, he slipped right before he played the cross, which made it doubly impressive to me. I mean, he had a slight stumble, if you remember.
It's definitely glid, not glide.
Glided. I thought it might be glided.
He fucking spanked it, didn't he? That's glid. What we're saying.
Yeah. But no, I mean, he is scarily good for his age, you know, as we've discussed before. But yeah, these blistering starts are kind of to halves of what helped us achieve great things in the first half of the season. And as Ricky mentioned last week, you know, they've been a bit infrequent this year, but we're so good at overrunning teams when we use this tactic. And, I think that when we've showcased we can do it, and it was nice to see it happen again, in, you know, this time, because I don't think we've seen it that often for many reasons, you know, again, injuries and suspensions and things like that, and just trying to get like a team, that fulcrum of the team sort of back and powering again. But I thought we saw that today.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a comment Brennan Johnson made last week, I think, about his cross for Werner's goal, where he said he doesn't need to look up because they know the runs they're all making. Mm. And I got that feeling with this one. Saar didn't need to look up. He knew if he put it into that space, someone would be running on. And, you know, you're absolutely right. It was a fantastic cross. I think, again, similar to last week, once we got that goal, we exerted the pressure. And that second goal, you know, I mentioned earlier on about how good I thought our pressing was. Our second goal was all about our pressing. Neo Johnson's pressing Konsa and forces the pass. And then Decky robs Tielemans and then passes it to Saar, who lays it off for Johnson and scores. And I think tightening the knot on them, just squeezing them is really, really important. I think the other thing that changed in the second half is that Villa changed formation after our first goal. They switched back to a 4-4-2. So that blanket that's over us and they're trying to stifle us has gone. We've got a bit more space to play in after that. So I think that's the other key point. Villa came for a point. Once that didn't happen, then I say came for a point. It was at their place. I mean, that's what's really embarrassing, isn't it? About that they're playing a key game.
I would slightly temper that. I would be a little less hubristic. I would say that what they did was they made the fatal error of adjusting their game to try and accommodate us. I don't know if they came for a point. I mean, I see your point is that they weren't going to win the game, but they wanted to stop us playing. That was their primary thought. This is another thing I love about Ange Ball, and I think it's another great point. I think it's another great consequence of what happened. Emery choked. By making that shift before the game, he's shown that Aston Villa are looking to aspire to be, whereas we insist on being. There's no aspiration. We are that. And this game proved that tenfold.
I mean, I think that's my point, Steph. I think they were entirely passive in this game, in that they were reacting to us.
I mean, they were sent out with, they've played most of the season playing their football, and all of a sudden, by making that adjustment, what Unai Emery is basically telling his team is, we're not quite good enough to go toe-to-toe with this club. We need to adjust. And so subliminally, they're already, I think, playing, I'd say slightly hamstrung, but, Leon Bailey's not flying around doing what he does. He's been given a task. And his task is essentially to stop, to repel our raiding fullbacks. I mean, I think it's, we're saying the same thing. But
they were almost playing us and the points difference. And I think that's the mistake. they thought that if they can maintain that gap, then that might see them home. And they're probably right.
They thought too much.
If they'd beaten us, it was going to be really tough for us to close them down.
8 points,
But, of course, this is another angle of Ange Ball, which is Ange, we play how we play. And if it's good enough to get what needs to be got, it'll happen. Now, it doesn't mean you're not smart, but you certainly don't do things like change your shape for one game when you've played a certain way the whole season. I mean, so when we talk, the dominance, as you said, you score and then suddenly you're changing back to another system and player. I mean, Villa must have been
I think they did the same for City.
Did they?
I think they changed for them as well. So
that's a compliment. That's a respect to us that they're changing their formation the same way they would do for City as they do for for us, which is great. It might have been their Sonnet wing back in an FA Cup semi final moment though.
But it wasn't, was it? It was certainly wasn't. You talk about the period of dominance. I mean, I think at 2-0, it's an interesting question. Was the game over at 2-0? I felt very comfortable.
Yeah, I did as well. I did. I mean, I think we'll go on and talk about something that happened about, 5 minutes after these goals.
If you wish to break the order of this, you can. I don't mind if you break the order. I'm not chained to this order. I'll go where it happens, my friend. So if you want to go there, I'm ready. I'm ready to go there. Go on.
No, I think you've got one more course to get through before you get to your
can't
dessert.
Do it. He cannot do it, can he? He cannot do it. Well, let's get there quickly then. Johnson was preferred to Werner in the starting lineup. Did he justify his selection today and how did he play?
Yes. Yes, he did justify his selection. I think it was his best game in a Spurs shirt. I thought he was superb. I thought his pressing, I'll say that word one more time, was really, really important. I thought it was interesting seeing him on the left because that gave him the ability to go around his man and get around the outside. He looks like a player who's really growing, week by week. And Steph, you're going to find out why I put this here because the following question in terms of the order, because I think the other thing around Johnson is that, after that McGinn foul. He's the first one who's up and in there. He's in McGinn's face.
Now,
he's
now,
the
hang
one
on,
who's responding
hang on, now,
to
now,
it.
And you're
well,
cheating.
No, these flow into
cheating.
Each other, Steph.
You've
these
just gone right into it.
No, these flow
right
through.
We're not
these
talking about
through.
That. We're
these
talking about
through.
How they're playing. Do you see this?
You've gone
you
in like
this?
A John McGinn tackle.
Do you see this? This is a, this, see. If see, I'm not going to go all Chris Kavanagh and like not wave a card at that. I'm giving you a yellow for that immediately because you just carried on, just gone through. I'm not having that. Let's stick to the question. Let's stick to the order of things, and then we can get to that bit. No, I mean. In all seriousness, what you're saying about Johnson, I think, is very important, both in that regard, which we will enjoy debating, not debating, discussing, admiring in about 5 minutes. But it was also something I noticed from the first minute, is that he showed his ex-teammate, I believe my friend Johnny was telling me that the two of them played together at Forest, which I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember Matty Cash at Forest, but then when I thought about it, he was. So it's quite smart, really, to put
against
each
other. They could do with a bit of cash at the moment, couldn't they?
Indeed. But I loved seeing he was just up for it. He was more physical in the first 10 minutes of this game than he has been at the beginning of any other game he's played this season. And it was a continuum from winning that ball last week. It suddenly seems like he's, I can do this. I can be aggressive.
I think it was really important that he started like that, especially going up against Cash, but doing it in a disciplined manner. So he's like, I'm not going to come in. I'm not going to fly in. I'm not going to lose my head, but I'm going to show you, you're in a game here. And I agree with both of you. Like he's picking up, he's getting on, the goal scoring sheet, a fair few times now. So he's always a threat there. And I was a bit, I've not been so sure of him on the left, but he really proved me wrong today. And, he's really just, if this is the trajectory now, then we've got a real player on our hands, and give it a couple of seasons and sky's the limit for him.
I really think he's putting pressure on Decky now. I think if we're honest, has probably had a 6 out of 10 seasons so far. He's been pretty, he had one very, very hot spell, but on the whole, I think he's been, pretty average most of this season and doesn't look entirely comfortable in this formation or, the role he's being asked to play by under Ange. And I really think Johnson's putting pressure on him for that spot.
Yeah, I mean, irony of ironies that both of them should be so intrinsic in the first two goals happening, especially, Decky did, I agree with you, I thought Decky was very average in the first half,
today,
but in the second half he was absolutely, he started so well. And but then the game started to play into the areas that Decky likes to operate in, so, he started to have more fun. But back to Brennan. I agree. I think that his ceiling is incredibly high. I think we've discussed on this pod several times, I think we all have come to the agreement that with him, it's a case of maybe psychological. Can I? Am I? Will I? I think we've said, would he have a little more of the Madisons in his personality to push him to do it? And I think he's showing that now. I mean, I really do. And I felt today was really, really aggressive. And Werner's done nothing wrong at all since he's come in. He's been excellent. But, I think it's Brennan's shirt to lose at this point if we're putting the two of them together.
I don't see it like that because I think we also rotation. And
I agree.
If Ram's right and Werner came into this game with a knock, then, that partly explains it. And if that is the case, then, maybe Werner would have started otherwise. He's tended to play on the left more than Johnson has. In terms of kind of Johnson's kind of mentality, you're saying we all agree. I genuinely don't know, and I don't know enough about him to kind of make those judgments. I think we see I've seen plenty of him where I think it's quite spiky and what have you. And, maybe it's just form. I don't know. I think part of it is, he's got quite, I just said this a couple of weeks ago, didn't I? He's got quite a soft babyish face. And I think maybe that also kind of leads towards people thinking that.
Yeah. I mean, in my case, I can only say this in my case, that's absolutely not how I see it. I mean, it's not about that. It's literally about, not being timid in a challenge versus not being timid in a challenge. Not being afraid to put a foot in versus being afraid to put a foot in. And And earlier in the season, he was definitely, and that could be confidence. Maybe it's confidence over mentality. I mean, mentality is maybe a trigger word. Maybe it's confidence, but his confidence is flying now.
Or finding your feet in the system. I mean, I think he's quite, you know, I think, you know, one of the things he excels at, I think, is his pressing. I think he is quite aggressive. And I don't see that in the way that you do.
He's a fast presser, but he's not always a physical or aggressive presser. But yeah, after what seems like several months of facing teams who put 10 men behind the ball, in this game, we faced the other tactic teams have used against us this season. And we were kicked all over the place by Aston Villa. How did we deal with that?
I think, you know, I keep coming back to this thing about us being very professional today. And I think that sort of rings true for me. Like, we could easily have gone like hunting for cash and lost our heads when the ref wasn't punishing Villa's shithousing. But we stuck to our plan and we didn't bite back. That said, we also weren't meek. You know, like we stood up to them without ourselves overstepping, like, you know, going past that red line.
I think that's right. I think, you know, you were saying earlier on, Steph, about it being a professional performance. And I think this is kind of one of the ways that we were professional. If you compare it to, say, the Brentford game a few weeks ago, where we let Morpé get to us and, you know, Ange after that game was clearly annoyed with how some of the players let that get to them. And I was kind of reflecting on that before the game, you know, when we indulged in this a little bit last week about, you know, who was going to kick Matty Cash. And, you know, that, I think that's fine as a laugh, you know, as a joke, what have you. But I think actually Ange would have been pretty annoyed if we were chasing around the pitch looking to try and kick Cash, because it means we weren't concentrating on our game. So, yeah, I think, you know, back to your point earlier on, Steph, around the professionalism, I think that's, you know, a good example of where it was, and that's why it was such a good performance. I also think we were a little bit more vocal with the ref today. I think that there was, you know, we were pushing back at the ref when things were going on. We were backing each other up. Didn't make a lot of difference, but we were trying it at least.
I also think it's a bigger fuck you to Cash and Villa by not doing, you know, not going hunting around for him as well.
Well, I mean, look, let's be honest. These are all professionals. The professional circuit is different to the fan circuit. You know, as you said, Milo, we have a laugh about it, and who's got a bounty on who's going to get Cash, and, you know.
I think it was Johnson, wasn't it? Johnson was the first in, though, if we'd had our bet on that.
He was. No, that's what I said. He was the first in, and their ex-teammates, I mean, he was, and it was within 2 minutes. But I think you're both absolutely right. You know, in the real world, professionals shouldn't do that and largely don't think like that, because any deviation from focus on the game at this level is terrible. It's a terrible disruptor. I think we handled it with such aplomb. And it's interesting, that whole thing we talked about last week where Romero's not had a card yet this season. I mean, would you have bet on him coming out of Villa Park without a card?
Yeah,
it just goes to show we're fans. Well, you would have. Okay, well, you would have. Many of us wouldn't. So you would have won. You would have won big in Vegas with that bet. But I mean, I think the overreaching point is that, you know, again, you know, to your point, Ange has, you know, really, really made sure that we learn our lessons this season. And the Malpe incident was a teaching moment. And he's made sure, obviously, that it ain't going to happen again. getting kicked all over the place by Chelsea. We're seeing James Maddison now making sure that referees know that he's unhappy with the way things are going. And he's starting to work the refs in a way that I think is, you know, professional. These are all details, really important.
Thick as well. Late on in the game, they were trying to rough him up, weren't they, when everything else had failed. Again, vocal with it. And we had others. I think Johnson was one. No, it can't have been Johnson because he'd gone off by that point. But we had others in there who were pushing. Yeah, we were making a scene. So again, the kind of stuff we were talking about. And it's...
Sonny's a vocal captain now as well. You see him going up to the ref and, you know, and he kind of explains he's doing what a captain should be doing. So he's not like ranting and raving in front of him, but he's making it very clear that he's not happy that, his team's getting kicked about.
And then we come to, do we have any questions about John McGinn's red card?
What the fuck did he think he was doing?
Why is he such a cunt?
Why is it when I looked at John McGinn at that moment, I started hearing diddling, ding, 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 ding. You've seen Deliverance, right?
Mm.
Do you remember the banjo player?
Yeah.
In the trees. I think John McGinn looks just like the banjo player in Deliverance. I really do. I've been thinking forever because he also looks like a failed kindergarten art project. Like, you know, make a face, you know, and so you give someone a piece of plasticine and you poke a couple of fingers in for eyes. And this is probably
not wow. Nice.
But you know what? I don't care because he's a dirty bastard and I'm going to have my moment of fun.
You can have that, Steph. Billy Redden. He played Lonnie, a banjo-playing teenager in North Georgia, and I've just looked at image search, and yeah, I think you've got something there.
I think so, and he played with the same level of agriculture I would suggest that particular character would have played were he on a football pitch. So
it's just nice to get something, you know, when Villa this is the third game we've had against them recently where there's been a bad foul on one of our players, and it's nice that finally we got some retribution. I do think the ref has got to take a little bit of the blame for this because for the kind of preceding 60 minutes, he'd let them get away with a lot. And, I think, we've spoken about this quite a lot through the season, haven't we, where kind of that officiating sets the tone for a game. Mm-hmm. And, McGinn may well have thought, well, actually, that's the level that we're playing this game at. That's the level that the ref's reffing at. So I can go in and be a bit physical. I mean, so I think the ref's got to take a little bit of the blame for that, for how he handled the game.
I agree. And also, you are right, because McGinn's reaction after it, he at no point did he think he was getting a red card.
No, he looked absolutely shocked, didn't he?
Yeah. And the way he walked off and then put his hands up as if to say, oh, I'll probably get a yellow for this. But, no, it wasn't anything. But ultimately, it was premeditated. It was dangerous, and I think Udogi got off lightly in the end.
He's very fortunate. I thought he might have done his knee. I mean, he came in on that side. It was a really violent. That could have taken out.
It's the type of kick you'd see in a street brawl, his stance and follow through.
Yeah, it was definitely like that. And look, his own centre half. I think it was Conserve. Was it? You saw him in the frame behind, just touching his temples after saying, "You've lost it."
Yeah.
Emery was doing that to him as well. Emery had a go at him and was telling him to calm down. I think it was Andrew who actually got him away from Johnson and the others.
Yeah,
he did. I mean, Gabby Abongolor, who obviously is going to be a slightly biased pundit and obviously is going to work for the Villa media, actually came out and thought it and said it was a yellow, but never a red card. I mean, I just think if you question that as a red card, you probably shouldn't be watching football. There was a red card all day. I tell you what, I do think as well, Matty Cash got away with one with another reckless challenge on Udogi about 10 minutes later, where he just basically flew into him with no discipline whatsoever. And fortunately, Destiny managed to get out of the way of that. But this is obviously a tactic, isn't it, chaps, that Villa, Villa play on that line and they're not afraid to throw themselves around, are they? And I think we came out with flying colours. And
we set another marker today that we're not going to be bullied. We're not, and this tactic isn't going to work against us. And I remember us being the same. Do you remember we were always thought of as having a soft underbelly and then Poch came along and in that first season, he kind of made us tough. And then we had people we had players in midfield like Dembele and Sandro and people suddenly realised that we're not going to be pushed around anymore. And I think it's like another evolution of that.
Yeah, I say on the pundits, then Mika Richards said after the game that McGinn isn't that type of player. And what I want is I want all of the pundits to get together and I want them to draw up a list of all of the players that aren't that type of player and publish it before the season starts because it'll be a lot easier for us. Because when there's a challenge goes in, we can say, well, actually, no, that shouldn't be a red card because he's not that type of player. And we can refer to it. And then we can say, someone else there was like, no. Romero is that type of player because he's not on that list. So it definitely is a red card. But if McGinn does it, he's not that type of player. Therefore, it isn't. Let's have transparency, have that list out there so we all know who is that type of player and who isn't that type of player.
Well, in fairness, by that metric, I'm sure Matty Cash isn't that kind of player because he sort of looks quite nice, doesn't he? He looks like a nice chap, really.
I don't like his hair.
No, his hair is a bit naff, but he doesn't look like that much of a rough chap, does he? Really? So he probably doesn't mean it when he assaults players.
Makes him more insidious.
He doesn't mean it when he puts our players out 2 years in a row. But also, as you mentioned 10 minutes ago, Milo, wasn't it nice to see Brennan steaming in there? I mean, it was nice. It was genuinely nice.
That's the Johnson that dealt with Richie last season, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's the Johnson. I like that. I like that bit of Brennan coming into things. I really do. It was great. But when you were saying, Ram, that we, I mean, the Battle of the Bridge will, you know, will go in our history as a moment that we prove to the world that we're tough. But I think we're proving things in a calmer, more controlled way. And as you said, we're standing up to things without showing, we're not losing any face or anything in the way we're going about it. I'm getting confused.
But maybe this is,
you know what I mean.
Maybe this is down to, you know, teams epitomizing their manager. You know, Poch is a very, very emotional man. And I think, Battle of the Bridge, I think if we're honest, I mean, it was fun. I really enjoyed it, but it probably didn't do us a lot of good in the long run, or certainly not that season. Mm. And, you know, our emotions got the better of us. I think Ange is I loved it at the time. And,
First time I'll ever admit, I suppose I've ever admitted that today. You're right. It didn't.
Ange is a lot more.
8 years later.
Ange is a lot more measured, a lot more controlled, more mature, isn't he? And, I think that what we're doing today is a better reaction to it. It's a better way of dealing with it. And I think the opponents will find it harder to deal with if we're just better. You know, if we just carry on with our game, we don't let it affect us. That's a lot harder for an opposition to deal with.
I agree. Give them a Paddington Bear extremely hard stare rather than just go flying in with your fists or something like that. Anyway, we've talked a lot actually about control and discipline. Let's just round it off. Villa go down to 10 men. I think some teams might have thought, we can have a right old field day here and might have got dragged into something a little hairier than was necessary. But instead, we just shut the game down, didn't we? Were you both pleased with how we controlled the game after Villa lost the banjo player?
Do you know what? I always want more. But so I was yearning for us to completely overrun them. But the reality was that we were so dominant. You know, we could conserve energy and pick our moments, which we did. And it was a bit like a cat playing with its prey. Mm-hmm. And that was actually, that ended up being more satisfying than just going a bit gung-ho.
Yeah, I mean, we just toyed with them, didn't we? And I think maybe, again, when you look at how they'd been treating us, we almost ended up, it was almost contempt, I think, in terms of, just kind of passing the ball around. You know, you've played 3 days ago, you're knackered, and we're just going to move it around, make you run more, make that extra man count. And then, you know, and that kind of results in those two late goals, doesn't it? Because by that point, they just didn't, they couldn't do it. They had a break, and on the replay on the TV, they showed a kind of wide angle on it, and there's Matty Cash trying to chase after the break, and you can see that he can't run. He's kind of hobbling almost, and he's trying to force himself along. And you just think that there's some of their players out there were dead on their feet, and we made it hard for them, and you know that's how we get those two late goals, because they just had nothing left.
And I think what's even more damning for Aston Villa with their lack of performance today, if you will, or their being outplayed. I mean, you know, they came to play. They just weren't good enough. But I mean, think about being a player. You've made an adaptation from how you play all season, especially to accommodate the opposition. That's failed. And then you have failed even when all bets are off and you basically said, well, OK, we're going to go back to what we do, get back in this game, whether that be because a player has lost his discipline, whatever. So there's a double sense of failure, surely, for Aston Villa today. And that's before we even get into the points game. I mean, this is a monument psychologically. And I know I like to, fart about in these waters probably more than some. But
don't
I would
fart
imagine
in the water, Steph. Don't fart in the water.
That's the only way I'll ever have a jacuzzi. There's an Eddie Murphy joke for you from Trading Places. If you're Aston Villa, what does this do? I feel I'm absolutely double shattered because we weren't good enough when we adjusted. We weren't good enough when we got back to our own game. We lost our heads. It's like, to me, that's like if you can have a 6-point loss, that's what that felt like for them.
I think it's, I've seen this, what happened to Villa today, I've seen happen plenty of times to us. And it was really interesting that we were that team that they changed the formation for, you know, so we're part of that club that, you know, with where they did that for us. And then we toyed with them, you know, and there was I mentioned the word evolution earlier, with regards to, you know, Poch and Ange and being, you know, being harder now. But this evolution of Spurs is something I haven't seen before personally. And this type of performance, you know, which was this total package. And so I think for Villa, I think this could be that they'll either completely it's blown the wind out of their sails, or it would just kind of they've just gone back to kind of the level that they should be at. And this is where we sort of come up behind them now, and then and we're getting to the level that we should be at.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably slightly overachieved this season. I was having a look at their starting lineup and thinking, like, how many of their, you know, they've done well and they've played some good football. But yeah, how many of their players would I take? How many players of their players would get into our starting 11?
And cash.
and I think, you know, I think they've got some good players. I think they've got some players we probably want as squad players, but I'm not sure that they've got any that would be starting for us ahead of who we've got. And I don't, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's going to hurt them because, yeah, as we said, if they'd won that game, then the gap between fourth and fifth was considerable. I think it feels to me, and maybe this can change. This is the kind of foolish thing you say, and then everything changes over the next couple of games. But it feels to me that at the moment there's a fight amongst the top three, and then there's a fight amongst us and Villa, and then below that you've got a group who are fighting over the remaining Champions League places. No, sorry, Champions League places, European places. And Villa would really have to drop quite a bit of form, I think, to fall below into that group. But you know, I mean, it could happen, I suppose.
I won't speculate. I'm tempted to, my word. But needless to say, I think that my rediscovered tea bet with one of our fellow squad members here on Games About Glory, I feel that tea bet is looking quite sharp.
I don't know if you noticed before kickoff, but. But Gareth said that he'd be quite happy with a 2-2 draw. And I think we know why now, Steph. He was thinking about his cup of tea, wasn't he? He wasn't thinking about what's good for Spurs.
He's been very quiet.
He's been very quiet, isn't he? Yeah. But the truth will always out. So we'll see. I suppose we shouldn't get too hubristic, even though I do enjoy a good bit of hubris on a day like this. Dragosan came on for cheat mode. Early in the second half. It's a very straightforward question. How do you feel he did?
I thought he was solid enough. I thought he looked comfortable. There was one moment where, I think early on when he came on, where there was two Villa players that were pressuring him just after he came on, and I thought he dealt with it well. I think obviously it was quite fortunate that, you know, firstly, it was unfortunate for us to lose VDV, and then Dragosan comes on and it's 0-0, and it's a pressure environment. And then we get those two quick fire goals. So I think that instantly kind of eases things up a bit. I've got no complaints about him. I thought he fit in, he slotted in well. And I think he looks like he's got obviously a bit of speed on him as well, which is good, which is what we're looking for. And, you know, I think it was a good moment for him to come on. And in what was a big game.
Yeah, I think he did all right. I think, I think he did better. He did well. I think he was clearly playing safe, which is understandable considering, you know, he's new to the league, he's new to the team, and kind of the importance of the game and the player, you know, how important the player he was replacing was. I think there's a couple of negatives. I mean, Steph, we were talking about this afternoon, weren't we? Or after the game, there's a couple of negatives, I think, around his performance that maybe negatives is the wrong thing to say, but there's a couple of things I think to keep an eye on. Again, this might just be him adjusting and not wanting to get caught out. I thought his first touch wasn't great. He was taking a couple of touches in order to control the ball. And I don't think his passing is best. And that's both of those are things that I'd observed from him watching him at Genoa. And I thought in his positioning, he was playing a little bit deeper. I think he was a bit worried about getting caught for pace. And again, I think this might be because of how fast the player he's coming on to replace is. And, you know, obviously, again, adjusting to the league. But he was quite often a bit deeper than Romero, and he was quite often side on to play, which again, I think is him positioning himself. So if there's a ball in behind, he's ready to come back and get it. And, you know, this feels like nitpicking because I think he's good. I think he's a massive upgrade on who we had in those positions before in terms of kind of fit for the team. I just think those are things to keep an eye on. And hopefully we see less of them as he gets, you know, gets used to it, gets acclimatized. But yeah, just things to watch, I think.
I mean, when I tried to drag us out of shape earlier, I think the major point that you just made there, Ram, was the timing was so good for him, so good. He literally stepped on the pitch, and the first action after he stepped on the pitch is a goal. We go one up, which instantly changes how we play. It instantly changes how Villa, I mean, the dynamic shifts so yep. well. And I think that possibly afforded him the luxury of being able to maybe play a little safer, because we weren't going to be going, you know, we didn't necessarily have to go hell for leather, albeit we went on one of our bursts and took them for the second goal. I think the other, several things. I mean, I thought he fitted fairly seamlessly into the team. I thought overall it didn't look, if you bought someone in from Mars or even from Peterborough who had never seen Spurs and sat them down and said, what do you think of this last 20 minutes? I don't think they would have looked and said, well, that guy looks like he's a reserve. I think he acquitted himself really well. And you know, you would expect it to be that way. I mean, he's trained with the team. I think he also is playing on the left-hand side. I mean, he was signed as you know, a backup for Christian, as right? So, I mean, I think we've got to also give him that allowance. He's coming in playing on the left, so maybe that gives some body shape. I mean, I know he can play all across the back, but, you know, he's essentially been spoken up as a Christian backup. So
I think my guess is that Ange wouldn't see it that way. I think Genoa, he played, they play a back three, so it's a different system. Right. But he did play across the back line, predominantly played as a central in the middle of the three. I doubt Ange sees it primarily as that.
Well, the facts bear you out to be correct, because he brought him on the left. He didn't bring on Davis.
Davis was on the bench. Well, there was the option there, wasn't there? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't bring on Davis, and he does. But I'm just saying, I think, you know, given that we all talk about him as a Romero and a predominantly right centre back, it's another factor. But I he didn't cause me any. I didn't get worried at all. I didn't see anything to be concerned about. I do see your points, Milo. I mean, I think, you know, if he was to play five games in a row for us in the first team, I think those things you're talking about would smooth out just in general as the nature of playing in the flow with the team. Some things you can't change. I mean, if he's not the dynamic passer that you want him to be from those positions, I doubt he's ever going to be what you might want. But I think he's competent and confident enough.
Yeah, I mean, his passing isn't as good as Romero's. That's a high bar. It's difficult to judge from Genoa, because Genoa are a bit of a hoof it team. So quite often, what he was doing there was skying it or playing quite heavy long passes. So that kind of intricate build-up play that we, you know, talked about earlier on, I've never seen him do that. But he doesn't look, the way he passes the ball doesn't look a great fit for that. But he's got other attributes that work really well. I'm not trying to dig him out here. I'm just saying, you know, early assessment of this player, what his strengths and weaknesses are, you know, what did I see in this game that kind of reinforces that or contradicts that? I'm not saying he's bad at all. I'm just saying these are things to look for. And I think certainly the positioning, I think, Steph, is the one that I think should be fine once he's got a bit of time in the league. The passing, I think, and the first touch are probably always going to be not as good as Romero.
I think also this is one of the great beauties of having various departments within the club that are now congruent. And I think that we can safely say that our recruitment is aligned with what with what Ange wants. I've not seen a player come into the club that Ange doesn't mm-hmm. believe in. So I'm very confident that Ange is happy with what he's seen of the player. And so for me, just watching as I do, because I didn't watch him at Genoa. I mean, you did. I didn't. So I've seen very little of him other than YouTube. And then he comes on today. And what I saw was, you know, was a lot more seamless than I would have expected. I thought he might have had a rougher time, especially after the Everton game, where I thought, that was a bit unfortunate here and there, what was going on. So anyway, we will be watching him, and hopefully we don't. I'll be blunt. I hope I don't have to watch him for 10 games of the season, because I want Mickey van der Ven to be fit. Having said that, if we did, I would be okay.
It's probably worth saying in the press conference, Ange said that he didn't think that there was an issue with Mickey. And Dragosan was warming up at half time. So it seems pretty clear that van der Ven felt something in the first half.
Yeah.
They probably said, go out again, see if you can run it out. And I didn't see an incident. I didn't see him, pulling up particularly. He went to the turf and waved, didn't he? And I think it's just, I can still feel that twinge, get me off.
Yeah. I think it was smart and precautionary.
Yeah.
He needs to stop doing it, because it gives me a heart attack every game. Every time he goes down, I'm like, oh, no, not again.
I know.
We're going to have to. Beautiful legs.
We're gonna have to do a special adjunct pod sometimes, you know, the biomechanics of Mickey van der Ven, an analysis by the Game Is About Glory. But I think, look, we've covered, I don't know about you guys, I don't think we need to get into where we think this ranks in our performances of the season or what we thought of Villa. I feel we've covered both of those fairly amply, right? I mean, mm-hmm. anything more to say about either of those? I don't think so. I think we're all in agreement that this is one, if not our most impressive, one of our most impressive performances of the season. And I mean, I think we sort of said what we think of Villa, haven't we?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So that leads us to one positive and one negative in 30 seconds.
Okay. First, so positive, we haven't mentioned him, which is crazy, really. It was great to have Porro back. I thought he had a good game. It's just, you know, maybe yeah. other people, you know, were a bit, I don't know, we'll get the headlines, but I thought he was really, really good. Yeah. Great to have him back on corners and set pieces, and just his all round contribution was really good. Do you see the covering challenge he made in the first half, which I think it was actually, it ended up being offside.
But then the
fist punches yeah. and the shouting and yeah, I love him. Negative. I haven't prepped for these this week. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I'm trying to think of a negative. Vic got a little cut on his head. Poor Vic.
Oh yeah. It was a stud, wasn't it?
They zeroed in and he was just screaming, I suppose, you know, a stream of vitriolic Italian, I suspect. I don't know. But I thought at that point, is that like a concussion thing going on? Has he just like lost it? He's a bit Basil Fawlty there, I thought. No, I know. I was having fun with it. Then I saw the giant glob of grease on his head, Vaseline. He must have got a cut, mustn't he?
The stud came down. The player jumped over him, and then the stud came down. Just caught the back of his head. I think as much as anything, Vic was making a show of it to try and get the ref to protect him a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. A performative artist. I like that.
Well, my negative has kind of been answered already. My negative was VDV going down again. But as Milo said, if Aaron said it's nothing serious, that's not really a negative, then great, you got a bit of a rest. Positives, I mean, where do you start? But I would say maybe we should give a special mention to Son again, actually, because that was it two assists and a goal? But I'll say that our away support, again, was just absolutely magnificent from the beginning of the game. There was in such full fine voice and all the way through. So I'm going to give it to our away support because everything else was so good and they deserve a mention.
It's always a good day out at Villa Park. Great place to go. I think we've covered so many positives, and I think what I like about the positives this week is we're using it to spotlight players that maybe we didn't get to in our in our waves of praise for Tottenham Hotspur this week. I'm going to give my positive to our 2-in-2 striker who apparently can't hit a cow's arse with a banjo, Timo Werner, who once again has shown that actually not only is he a very, very useful member of this squad, simply in the way he was deployed in this game, but he's actually, when he doesn't have to think so much, he's a canny finisher. It was a really lovely finish, if you think about it, the way, you know, that he opened his body up, as they say, which is a strange phrase, but I think we all know what it means. He got the angles perfect, lovely finish, and really happy for him. And, you know, I love to see him and Johnson both starting to get regular goals. This is very exciting. Very exciting stuff.
He gets a very good keeper as well.
Yeah, yeah. Also a wanker, it must be said.
It was nice
to see that wanker shut down thoroughly. I mean, he didn't get any opportunity to shithouse or use his mouth or any of it. Absolutely silenced. Silenced by the ineptitude of his own team and the glory of ours. And I have no negatives. I'm not about negatives this week. Bollocks. We were great. They were shit. We hammered them. Wonderful. Anyway, with that wonderfully mature wrap-up, shall we go to the week that was, Milo?
Yeah. So on Tuesday, the club announced that season tickets would be increasing in price by 6% next season, and probably more troubling, that there was going to be a further squeeze on concessions for senior citizens and season ticket holders, with restrictions on the number of concession tickets available and a reduction on the discount being phased in, and no new senior concession tickets from the 25-26 season onwards. The club justified this by saying that matchday costs have increased significantly over the last few years, and that it has only raised prices once since we entered the new stadium, and then by only 1.5%. We spoke last week about this, you know, when we talk about the fab minutes, and the club committing to consulting with the trust on any ticket price increases. That consultation happened on the 21st of February and amounted to the club telling the trust what they were going to do. All this has caused understandable uproar amongst the fans. There's been quite a lot of noise online about it, and THFC flags have cancelled plans for a TIFO that they had planned for the City game in protest. I said last week, you know, when we were talking about this, that we were likely to come back to it. So we have. What do you think, guys?
I mean, I'll say as a season ticket holder, I was expecting it. So it wasn't really a big surprise that the season tickets went up. But it's, yeah, I mean, my own personal views, I'm in the south stand. I'm in block 451. It's a safe standing area. And I'm now looking personal experience, I'm now looking for another area in the south stand just because the price rise is getting a bit too much for me. And you know, if I move slightly further back down towards the pitch level or even further up, then I'm making a fairly considerable saving there. And that's me as someone, you know, I can afford a season ticket, you know, gratefully, but I'm getting priced out, and I do worry about people that maybe you know, on lower incomes or younger people, for example. And I just felt it was a bit, I don't know, it's all a bit obtuse is the word I'd put.
Steph?
It's very, very tough. My instinct is immediately to say that I cannot really understand how squeezing concessions in such a way is actually financially worth it versus the ramifications that it said of, you know, the discontent it sends through the support, the people it affects, or you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think we'd be foolish to deny that there is a reality that, you know, costs have gone up everywhere for everyone. I don't deny that as a fact. And I think we were discussing just off pod that, you know, concerts, going to the, you know, the films, the pictures. God, I sounded like an old man there. Going to the cinema, going to the theatre, everything costs more. These are now, you know, big ticket items. The days of just showing up and being able to just pay your money are over. At the risk of sort of going in on your territory here, Milo, and put your hand up if I am, because you should definitely get to say this. I mean, you've made some very good points about, from the club's perspective, they would probably much rather have the type of supporter that's going to go in and, you know, spend a couple of hundred quid in the shop and, you know, sort of the big spending two or three times a year rather than the regular, like, you know, I'm there every game, but I'm barely going to buy a sausage roll supporter. Is that something that is just, you know, endemic in our club, or is it the way the world is going? I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me, but that's because instinctually, that's how I think. Instinctually, I think of the people that you're talking about, Ram. I think of people who don't have the money, and I want them to enjoy the same pleasures that I do from football. And, you know, even for the senior citizens, my emotional reaction is this is a terrible blow, but, you know, for them too. But I think there's maybe a wider thing that we're to discuss there as well. So in short, I don't think, I think it's a sort of a necessary evil, the price rise. And the things that probably concern me the most are things that I'm sure Milo's going to talk about, which are this whole thing of communicating with the trust, you know, versus where are we going to encourage and find new fans to come. So somewhere in there is an opinion that might make some sense.
Yeah, I mean, the
I don't think anything's straightforward, though.
The new fans bit probably doesn't apply so much with senior citizen concessions or season tickets. It's probably more about kind of the general cost of going to the football, doesn't it? But I'm kind of generally against any price rises on anything. So
I agree. Sell them all.
And I found the lack of consultation or like genuine consultation on this pretty worrying. You know, we spoke a lot last week about how the club's manager neuter the trust and fab, and there isn't really any meaningful meaningful communication out from them. Because the club are holding the pen, and the kind of the secrecy around what's discussed and when, I find troubling. You know, if the club were genuine about consulting with the trust, they would have given the trust time to talk to their members, and find out, you know, from them how they what they thought. If the club genuinely thinks that the current position with concessions is unsustainable, then they should have gone to the trust, I think, with that proposition and asked them to come up with ideas about how that could be dealt with. I mean, I think the reality is that the club know that they could sell every ticket in the stadium at full price several times over if they wanted to, depending on the game. And they object to having any reduced price tickets. And, you know, I think that's where they are. And, I think they're probably right. They know the... they know the value, or they know the going rate for these things. They know, what other comparable, sporting or entertainment events go for. And, sadly, that is kind of where football is. And they know that if anyone gives up their season ticket as a result of this, there's a queue of people, 10 times as many people queuing up to take that ticket off them. Mm-hmm. So, and I think the club will also know that at the moment there's a lot of people who want to go because, we're an exciting team. We've got a good, good manager. We've got a lot of new players coming through. That helps them doing this. And I think at the moment, as we said, the trust and fab being silenced, and not having a lot of power or weight, helps them again. So maybe they've seen this as the perfect opportunity when all of that is kind of together, when they can take advantage of it and they kind of bank all this in one go because they might not have that opportunity next season or the season after. And they've just kind of seized the moment. I don't like it. I don't like how they've gone about it. I don't like the way they're treating, fans who've, followed the club for a long time. And, I have similar, Steph, we've spoken a few times about kind of generational inequality and, younger fans, people who are kind of just starting out in work or, university or something like that. And God knows how they can afford to go. And I kind of worry about where the next generation of fans are coming from. Absolutely. But that's probably a slightly different issue to this one, but just the whole thing really. And what I don't want is, I mean, maybe it's too late, but what I don't want is football to be kind of preserve of wealthier older people.
I think what's abundantly clear whenever news of this nature comes out is that there's two truths. There is a squeeze on costs. Things are more expensive. And this is really not the right way, in my opinion, to be going about dealing with that particular issue. And as I think we've all been saying, there are a lot of tricky details in the middle of all that, which at this point, probably our biggest discontent would be that they're not being dealt with by the trust because that communication is sort of been, I suppose, neutered is what we're saying, right? So, yeah.
I think... ultimately, and it sounds so cliched to say it, but it is, football is a working class game, and that's what its roots are, and it's a community game. It's about people within the community, and it's about the enjoyment that a community gets from being able to go to the football. As cliched as it sounds, is undeniable. But unfortunately, we do live in a world which is a capitalistic world, and people will say to you, people will talk about the free market. People will talk about you make your money, you pay your money, you make your choice, and that there is a validity in that, as well. But ultimately, for me, I go to the football, and I'm so grateful to be able to go to Spurs and to be able to go to every home game, and to just lose myself for 100 minutes. And I want that to be available to anyone and everyone who wants to support our club.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit it. You've put it in a nutshell. That what really the biggest issue here is for me personally, and I sit right next to you with this. Football is a working class sport, but the truth is, it hasn't been a working class sport for some time. And actually, the roots of that happening started with Sky Television, which we're certainly not going to get into here. Yeah. I mean, there is a reality versus emotional, attachment to football. And I find myself constantly caught with the realities of what is versus the utopia that I wish still was. And I think that's another central point whenever news like this comes out. My emotional side and my human investment side comes out against the realities of the world we live in.
That's a good place to leave it. So Nathan Gardner, Nathan Gardner's returned to the club as head of sports science. Gardner was previously at the club for 14 years up until 2020. when he left to join Scott Parker at Fulham. Gardner will replace Sam Pooley, who's leaving the club after a decade. Gardner, whose brother is assistant manager at Blackburn Rovers, is a qualified as a sports scientist, physio and coach. So he has a sports science degree from Loughborough University, a physiotherapy degree from King's College, and is a holder of a UEFA A licence. I think at Fulham, when he was with Scott Parker, he was a first team coach there rather than the kind of sports science side of it. Know anything about him? Is this good, bad, don't care, move on?
Don't know anything about him. What I do know is if Nathan Gardner is sitting behind the average football fan who says he's shit or what the fuck's he doing, he doesn't know what he's doing, with that level of accreditation, he must just shake his head and think, you really don't know anything, because I know a lot.
He fell out with Andros Townsend, who Townsend was subbed off, I think, and they had an altercation on the sideline.
So that was who he fell out with that caused the end of Andros at Spurs. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So, and I think the other thing actually to bear in mind with this is that he would have been working with Matt Wells, because Matt Wells was part of that coaching setup. Leo Black has signed his first professional contract with the club. Leo has been a regular starter for under-18s this season, plays as an inverted right-back after switching from his previous position as central midfielder. Leo is part of the team that won the under-17 Premier League Cup last season. I think we're kind of saying that every week at the moment. I don't actually have to delete that out of the notes. We just like put another player in front of it and just say who they were. He's captained the under-18s for the first time in a 6-3 win over Southampton earlier this season, and made his debut for the under-21s also earlier this season in Premier League Cup game against Bristol City. I really, really rate him. He's a really, really good player. I'd hope that he makes the step up to the under-21s permanently next season. I think he's one that we ought to be trying to fast track through the system. He's made for Ange Ball, and he's really good.
Yeah. Good to know. I'm going to keep my eye open for him. I just was found my mind drifting when I saw 6-3 win at Southampton. I was thinking of other 6-3 victories we've had there, featuring certain amazing strikers of our past who scored incredible hat-tricks. Jumpers for goalposts, Holston yellow shirts. Oh, God. Oh, sorry. Stop me. Help me. I'm getting nostalgic.
I think you're just talking like this because you want to. I think you're just talking like this because you want to get a concession ticket for the ground. If you start talking about jumpers for goalposts and old shirts and stuff like that, then the club might let you sneak through. So
they might let me sneak through. You never know. They never know. You're not wrong. Yeah, that was a great shirt. That one, wasn't it? The yellow shirt, the Holston yellow shirt. Ronnie Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough. I should end it here, shouldn't I? I should just stop. Just to say, it has been fun. What a great day. This day, you know, let's be honest, this game couldn't have turned out much better. I mean, we were all on edge about it. It is and was the biggest game of our season so far. You know, whatever anyone wants to say about that, that's the fact. Mm-hmm. And we just passed it with such flying colours. So good. So this has been a lot of fun, hasn't it? Thanks, lads.
Yes. So more next week.
Thank you.
More next week as we discuss our trip to Craven Cottage and all of the latest Spurs happenings. So until then, see ya.